I'm live in Newry this morning, just across the road actually from Newry bus station, where you can get on and take a trip across the border. And that's exactly what we'll be doing over the next few days here on Good Morning Ulster. We're going to Dublin, we're going to Athlone, but today we're focused on Northern Ireland and where that campaign for United Ireland is going. Real questions for nationalism. Sinn Féin's rise to become the biggest party at Stormont and growing success in the Republic. It has been fuelled by its ability to appeal to younger voters, and that's been seen on both sides of the border. Many of those people have no memory of the Troubles and have been won over by the party's policies on social issues like housing and welfare. But controversy over other things, like pro-IRA chants, has left Republicans unable to completely divorce themselves from that past. I've been looking at the changing culture and politics of young Republicans, emphasised by the likes of the controversial Belfast band, Kneecap. Kneecap certainly know how to attract a crowd. The Irish language hip-hop group aren't the first musicians to build a reputation with controversy as well as their songs. You could say they embrace the infamy. But to the band, the message is as important as the music.
The last thing I'll say is, England, get out of Ireland!
At the heart of Kneecap's fan base are young Republicans, and that politics is important. They're here in West Belfast not to see a performance, but to see the band unveil a mural, and they are buying huge amounts of Kneecap's merchandise. There are T-shirts, hats and headscarves covered in images from the Troubles, like barbed wire, balaclavas and petrol bombs. But talk to people here and they'll tell you they're interested in issues like poverty, not paramilitaries.
For context, I have a master's in peace studies. To me, it's not about like republicanism versus unionism and loyalism, etc., etc. To me, like, what the future that we should be looking at is like the working class versus everyone else.
Sinn Féin's rise in the polls on both sides of the border has been fueled by appealing to young Republicans like Amy Reid, with policies about housing, welfare and human rights. It's worth noting that right beside the stall selling Kneecap clothing was another table doing a good trade in selling T-shirts showing support for the Palestinian territories.
Obviously, I care about like traditionally green and orange issues, but what I care about is getting our kids fed, getting people educated, getting our NHS up and working. I care more about socialist issues than I care about the border, to be pretty honest.
The images on Kneecap's T-shirts are cartoony and tongue-in-cheek, but they're designed to be provocative. Just to give you an example, there's one here that features a drawing of a burning police van. However, like many in this crowd, Mowgli Bapp, who's part of the band, would rather talk about the present than the past and about current concerns shared on both sides of Belfast's peace walls.
What's important is anti-austerity, and what's important is the working class, and that's important to us. And I think today we're in the Sandy Row, we got support from people in the Sandy Row, and I think both sides of the community are suffering because of the Tory government, because of PIPs, because of the DLA. It's all getting cut. And we don't care. We can talk about images all day long, but when we go either side of the community, that's all they care about, is people.
Do you worry, though, that by having the petrol bomb images, the balaclava images, that you do mythologise the Troubles a little bit, that you do potentially keep up divides?
We're trying to talk about things people can't talk about, and we're young people in a post-conflict area, in a post-conflict country. So we want to just neutralise this conversation and say it's okay to talk about this, because there's only way to get through this is the truth and honesty.
Is that neutralising the conversation though, balaclavas and petrol bombs?
Well, I don't know how welcome you are in the Sandy Row, but I was in the Sandy Row and they were singing our songs, so that's all I can say to you.
But it's hard to escape that past in Belfast. The unveiling of the mural took place in the west of the city, under a large sign commemorating the deaths of three IRA members killed by the SAS in Gibraltar. And have a listen to what was shouted as Mowgli Bapp stood up to address the crowd.
Hey, Heron, I didn't start that, BBC. I'm looking at you, mister.
Somebody screamed, ooh, out the Rajah and that.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? Is that really a harmless thing to shout?
I think it's become an anthem of kind of wanting to your heritage to be accepted and wanting to be in control of your own community.
Although it could create a lot of pain for some people.
I mean, the difference between the old IRA and the new IRA is a large gap, and we still have to remember that the group that we're shouting about aren't the people who are active at the moment. They're not the terrorist group that we support.
But they're also a group that did lead to huge numbers of deaths in Northern Ireland.
Absolutely. And also the British led to a huge number of deaths in Ireland as a whole.
You know, I'm sorry to Michelle O'Neill that has happened to her. I think it's totally wrong, and it cannot be explained away in any shape or form. So let's park that in relation to posters and effigies of people.
Well, let's stay on that point, because if you are talking about posters and effigies of people, you were in Moygashel, weren't you?
Yes.
And you stood and you watched as a bonfire was set alight. And that was a bonfire with Leo Varadkar's face on it, wasn't it?
Well, people are taking it very, very angry in relation to Leo Varadkar. It wasn't my bonfire. I didn't decorate it. I didn't know what was on it until I arrived. I was there to as an invited speaker at the festival.
So you're a person in leadership position there. You're there as a speaker. You're somebody who's associating your name with that event. Should you not have said, get that picture down? If this isn't about people, if this is about actually being respectful to people and ensuring that that does not happen, why did you not take the image down?
Well, the first thing is this, and I've said this for many times over the years, somebody swinging into somebody else's community, somebody else's area, and telling them what to do is not going to work. I think it's about persuading people, making an argument and convincing people, because if you convince people and you persuade people, I don't want somebody to take something off a bonfire because Jamie Bryson says they should do it. I want people to do it because they're convinced of the argument and the merits of why they should do it.
You give a speech. Did you tell people to take the image down?
You gave a speech in which you criticised,
among other things, the Irish News and this programme. Did you say during that speech that actually what those people were doing by putting an image of somebody up was wrong?
Well, this goes back to the point I just made. It's not for me to swing into somebody else's community and start telling them what they should do at their bonfire.
You were telling them that community was not represented on the likes of this programme. That's what you were doing.
And I stand over that view. I mean, if that's what we're going to have a discussion about today, I'm more than happy to get into that.
The point I'm making is you were giving a view and basically saying, listen, here's what's right and here's what's wrong in my view. You're saying on this programme you don't think it's right to have the image of a politician put onto a bonfire and to be burnt. That is wrong. That is what you're saying. Yet you stood there and you were quite happy to stand by as that actually happened.
Yeah, well, look, the people chose to do that.
Been very disappointing. They were very low, and it has affected us mentally and physically. It's very frightening. We are very concerned. We are worried that will we ever get home? 3 weeks is a long time to wait. We have a wee boy at home that's starting to struggle. He's milking 200 cows. He's helping. We have 10, 12 horses. He's still trying to ride horses. He's sitting in an exam this morning. He milked 200 cows before he went to do the exam. And he's missing us, and he's missing his wee brother. He's still struggling from the loss of his sister. So he's very fragile, but he's being very brave. So I don't think the minister in the Foreign Office realised that it's not something we decided to do willy-nilly. We did it for a very personal reason, for ourselves to survive. We had more love to give. We wanted Max to grow up in a family that could still smile and still be happy, and give him a chance to have a good life. We couldn't fall apart when Ellie died and go, right, this is it, our life's over. We had to rise up and really fight every step of the way to get where we are. And we're just asking for a bit of help.
Oh, that's amazing, even you talk about his resilience. He's sitting in an exam while he's thinking about his little brother, who he hasn't had a chance to meet, and his parents all sitting in the middle of a war zone in Ukraine.
Yeah, that's it, for a 15-year-old. Who's been through so much already, you know, we all have. And we didn't start after the war. This all began before there was a war, so we didn't know there was going to be a war. So it wasn't really, we didn't go in here and say, oh, well, there's a war, we'll still go ahead with surrogacy. We already had our embryos created, and we couldn't go back from that religiously. And that's our views, that's just how we felt. You know, we had to support and go ahead and go through with it. So that's what we're trying to tell the ministers as well. You know, they're thinking, why did these people go when there's a war on? But We didn't. We were there before the war. We were here, spent the summer here before there was any war. Our family, we have been through a lot, but there, you know, this is our new beginning in the next part of our life for ourselves and for Max and for Jonty Bo. We're trying to build our life up again and to give this wee boy a good chance. So we will give him a good life. We have a lot of love to give.
And I can still hear him there as you're talking. And, you know, it makes it so very real. Clearly, the focus has got to be on Ukraine and Kyiv. But, you know, you made the decision to go ahead with surrogacy. And there's been a lot of talk about surrogacy. For example, the Pope had some very negative words about surrogacy. There are other people who feel it's such an important thing. What would you say to families who are considering surrogacy at the moment?
Well, for us, it's a long journey. You have to be prepared. There's a lot of work goes into it. Every checkup, there's a worry, and you panic and worry, but it's very worthwhile. For us as a family, we feel it's given us hope to survive and to live again for ourselves and Max. Max, he's going to have he lost his sister, but he now has got a brother in this life, and he will always have him. And that's what we wanted, Max, to grow up and, you know, to have his brother and be happy. And for people that can't maybe have children or having problems, it is definitely a really good way to go, we feel, anyway, for ourselves. And yes, there is the religious side of it too. And I am a Catholic, Peter's Presbyterian, and I go to Mass, I pray really hard, and I go, God, please forgive me for this, but it's our way to survive and maybe take the silence out of our house. Because our house was very sad. And this has brought a bit of a light back into the house. When a child dies, your house goes very quiet. And you're looking, you're trying to make noise. And it's very hard to make a noise. And now there is going to be a noise in the house. Lots of noise.
Good Morning Ulster has seen an interim report on structural failures at Belfast Victoria Square. And in their interim findings, the authors claim that a column at the troubled residential development was constructed using concrete that was under strength by some 75%. They go on to say tests on more than a dozen other columns suggest they are also under strength, although to a lesser degree. The interim report says too much water and too little cement was used in the mix for some of the concrete used at the site, and say the failings pose a serious health and safety issue. As you walk into this apartment, it just smells dusty and musty, and there are some bits of people's lives still lying around here. Like, there's an old chair covered in dust wrappers. The sink is still intact, although it's seen better days. And over on one side of the building, there are steel props helping just to keep this building stable. But you get a real sense of the structural failings when you look at the floor. There is a huge big crack that lies right along the floor of this apartment. We've come upstairs to another apartment, and it's here that the problems with this building became very obvious. There is a column here which splintered outwards, sending debris flying. And the report, which has been commissioned by the residents, we know says this is a substantial and serious structural failure. And in response, that's why these steel props have been put in place. I mean, there is another one here. And it's a substantial amount of work, something that's cost the residents up to this point something like £1 million.
You can't leave this. You can't leave an iconic building like that to become derelict. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's really just...
And it's more than a derelict building. It's your home.
It's our home, yes, absolutely. And, I never thought in my wildest dreams that after buying the apartment, that I would have to be moving somewhere else for the time being. I'm waiting 5 years in anticipation of something good, positive being done about it.
Are you comfortable with what you're seeing happening on the Gaza Strip at the moment?
I meet with the Arab ambassadors. I meet with the Israeli ambassador. I have my views, and there's a lot of important discussions go on.
Well, I'm trying to hear your views. I mean, that's what I'm asking. Are you comfortable with it?
No. What I'm not comfortable with are anybody in this time of conflict and war, in the Jewish community, or indeed in the Muslim community being targeted because of what's going on.
And you've made that point, and I understand that's your remit and role, but you're a politician whose voice carries weight, particularly on subjects like this. And it's a pretty straight question about what your view on what is happening at the moment in Gaza is. Are you comfortable with what you're seeing play out night after night?
No. What I'm not comfortable with is Jewish people in this country being targeted.
That's not an answer. That is not an answer. And people will listen to that and say that you're trying not to answer that question. And is that good enough for a person in your position?
In my position is to ensure that anti-Semitism in our country is tackled. That's my position.
Do you not feel it's your responsibility as well to ensure that people are protected, that people are given safety, that people feel that they will not face another night of bombardment? Is that not something you should speak out about as well?
All these issues are important, but look, I've been doing this work on anti-Semitism for 17 years in Parliament. My remit and my role is to ensure in that nobody oversteps the mark into racism by targeting the Jewish community.
It doesn't really affect us down here in the Midlands, but I think there would be some repercussions, especially people that are very passionate of not a united Ireland, if it was united.
And would that worry you?
Oh, not where I'm living, in the States of nowhere. They won't find me. I think the pair of us are okay.
We're fine. Nobody's fighting us where we are. But no, I feel like there probably is a generation that's coming along that doesn't really understand the history behind it. Yeah. And you definitely see that. And I think to them, it really doesn't make any difference because they don't even know what they're on about.
Well, Shauna wants time to consider the report, but earlier this week, she agreed to speak to me at the Wave Trauma Centre in North Belfast. Wave have been supporting her for years. She was just 10 years old when her mum was killed. And in order to protect her, her family didn't allow her to attend the funeral because there was just so much media there and such a focus on it. Because of that, at Wave, they've planted a rose bush in tribute to her mum. And when it was planted, John Boucher, who's been leading Operation Canova and, of course, now PSNI Chief Constable, he went along for that ceremony. She says he has been very supportive about this. And I spoke to Shauna about the process of getting to this point and her memories of her mum.
It's a bit harder now to talk about her as who she was because a lot of the family members, she's dead now almost 30 years. So a lot of the family members that knew her and had those memories are no longer with us either. So you hold on to anything that you can to try and keep her alive.
And you were just 10 when she died?
Yeah, I had just turned 10 a few weeks before. So any memory or anything I can get to hold on to, a grasp at it.
What do you remember about her as a mum? Because she was bringing up you and your brothers, basically as a single mum.
It's hard to... She was just my safe place. You knew you were safe around her. There was, the house was always full of fun and laughter, and I think we had too much, but we never wanted for anything. And she loved being a mummy. She loved torturing us. She was always playing practical jokes and stuff on us, but she loved being a mummy.
And I just imagine what it must have been like then for you to lose your mum in such circumstances. How do you explain that to a 10-year-old?
I don't think you can. I don't think really there's no book there going, your mummy was just ripped from them, their whole world. I mean, my whole world changed everything. The only thing that stayed the same was my GP.
And at that time, I'm sure you just have lots of questions. But I imagine as you become a teenager and you're growing up, those questions only grow.
Yeah, well, you're always wondering, always asking questions. But I didn't really ask questions because you didn't want to upset other family members. So you done a lot of Googling or going to the newspaper library and stuff and getting newspapers from around that time and just trying to find out as much as you could.
In a way, that's not necessarily the best way to find out.
It definitely wasn't the most healthiest way. I mean, when I went down to the newspaper library and the papers, I seen my mummy's body in the field and stuff, so I think it done more damage than it did good. But yeah, she just has become a headline now, which can be hard to deal with. Generally, when there's a story about Canova steak knife, her image is attached to it. That was an image that was put out around the time she died. So now I won't give out any more photos or anything like that because it's all I have to hold on to her.